Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. I started the show this afternoon mostly as a test program because I was having technical difficulty starting a show yesterday, and I wanted to make sure that I could use Blog Talk before tomorrow. On the 28th tomorrow, we have Stephen Pidgeon as a guest, and then on the 30th, we have Alfred Weber. That's the 28th, Stephen Pidgeon, 8 p.m. Eastern, and Alfred Weber on the 30th at 8 p.m. Eastern. I have been working with a new translation that Marianne Eulinger Mondrian just finished. It's from May 5th, 1946. It's a talk Billy had with Spoth. And I just have a few quick notes I can throw a few things out that might be of interest. And as I've been doing also some work on Contact Report 229 and a little bit more work on the Way to Live book. So we can go through these somewhat quickly, hopefully. Anyway, let me start with the notes about Spoth. And if anyone doesn't know who Spoth is by now, let me just say very quickly that Billy, in his first 11 years of his life, starting from about 5 years old to about 16 years of age, Billy had contacts with an extraterrestrial human named Spoth. This particular contact occurred May 5th, 1946, and Spoth was mostly talking about problems which would occur financially on the Earth and about problems that would occur related to nature, related to our weather, related to extensive mismanagement of our business firm. So I'm going to probably just end up reading a lot this afternoon. And some of this is a little bit paraphrased, a little bit summarized. Spoth says, "As already in recent years, also today I have to make familiar with you many facts, which will certainly you will understand as well as consciously accept and work out, which, however, will only be possible for you because due to my action into your conscious development, you are already many times further developed in your rationality and in your intellect than normally would be the case with an Earth boy of your age." I think Spoth will go on to say that Billy's about four times more advanced. He's about as advanced as a 35-year-old man at this time. Spoth continues, "The future of terrestrial banking, companies and corporations, as well as politics, governments, and the economy, will be very profitable in the coming decades, after which, however, an extensive mismanagement will appear in all areas and will, from the 1980s well into the new millennium, let many things collapse. Companies and corporations will fall into great difficulties and must make use of state aid for their continued existence. Although for some their mismanagement will lead to bankruptcy, financial indebtedness will likewise develop on a private basis, such that they can no longer meet their financial obligations, just as this will also be the case in regard to the national budgets of many countries." This is very interesting because inevitably this conversation with Billy took place on Sloth's ship. And I find it kind of strange that here's this Spoth, who's like a 900-year-old extraterrestrial man, who's speaking to a 5-year-old Earth human about mismanagement in companies. This is very interesting. The whole leads to heavy economic breakdowns and to the dissolution and bankruptcy of long-established and decades-long rightfully managed banks, companies, and corporations. So Spoth is telling Billy about these future trends which will occur, these historic trends. And he continues here, a senseless and uncontrollable squandering of money for a lot of unnecessary things runs widely rampant and will even bring about family quarrels and the destruction of families. The future of the financial economy will be difficult because starting from the year 1988, it will become quite dark all over the world with regard to money. So we've jumped from Spoth's time with Billy, which was right around 1946 here, May 5th. He's jumping forward to 1988. And he talks about a financial problem that occurs in 1988. It will become dark all over the world with regard to money because then the foundation of capital power takes place in the U.S., which will intervene as a worldwide effective shadow bank and shadow government. So Billy talks about the shadow government and the shadow financial power in the United States here. Let me read here. It says, in the USA itself, the capital might will expand to a state internal shadow government, which in a secret wise for the population of the USA will govern the United States of America in accordance with its will, as is also done by another U.S. American shadow government that has already been existing for a long time and will survive even until far into the future. The new capital might, which was founded in 1988, as I have already explained, is to set up a global capital network, and indeed in a short space of time through which then not only are the world's financial community of banks extensively ruled in accordance with the world shadow government's own might structure. So there's a world shadow government as well as a American shadow government. So there's much that has to come to light here as we continue. With regard to these things, you have to learn a lot and thus also make use of many facts that I have already mentioned to you and the coming dangerously unpeaceful world happenings. You shall, however, also name the threatening terribleness bringing machinations of overpopulation that destroy nature, the water, the climate, and get very badly out of control of the good form and undermine everything that is natural. And this will lead to very heavy and primeval world-like natural disasters. And that's some of the research I've done indicates that the forests moderate the weather, and as we destroy the forests, the weather becomes more and more primeval or more and more extreme. And this was written back at a time when there was only 2.8 billion human beings in the world. Now imagine that. Let's just try to envision that. 60 years ago, there were only 2.8 billion people. Now, 60 years later, or a little over 60 years later, almost 70 years later, we have 9 billion, which just is stunning beyond belief. Let me shift gears a little bit to Contact Report 229, which is something I've probably mentioned a little bit before. Contact 229 often repeats the phrase, when the prophet of the new time comes. And the prophet of the new time, of course, is Edward Albert Meyer, and this is the new time that we're in. Quetzal starts to talk here, and Quetzal, of course, is one of Billy's contacts. And he talks about, he claims, and again, this is where the Meyer material is very controversial, very hard on religion here on the planet. And Quetzal says the biblical handed down stories are based on legends, deliberate lies, and falsification. And it's a deceitfully produced chronicle that he says is incorrectly arranged and wildly managed. So, and he gives some dates. For example, when Henoch was born, which is February 3rd, 9308 BC, Henoch, who we call Enoch today, Jeremiah, born February 9th, 662 BC, Jeziah, who we call Isaiah, February 7th, 772 BC, and I probably should really pronounce that Jeziah and Jeremiah, Eliah, born February 5th, 891 BC, and Eliah was flown to Srinagar, Kashmir in India on a beam ship, April 7th, 1842. So again, I'm just reading today mostly, which is sometimes not the best way to go, but I'm going to just do that for this afternoon. It says, when the prophet of the new times spreads his teaching, the time of the great transformation has begun. During the third millennium, human beings will be blinded by gold and material values to such an extent that they will be counting silver coins in countries everywhere. And again, the Meyer material is very harsh here again on our religions and says, they will build cult places to worship and will pay homage to a non-existent God. The Meyer material talks about a universal consciousness and explains that the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of this consciousness, which it calls the creation. But it says there is no God in the sense that our religions say, not a heavenly father that is looking over us. And so the Meyer material comes from this from a different perspective. Let me continue. The place for the worship to a non-existent God will become sites for merchants who lend various things for free. Judicial authorities will be unlawful and will impose insignificant penalties on wrongdoers. It says that every city and town will be a place of fornication, and the children and their children's children will live a life of degeneration, and they will raise old flags dripping with blood and spread terror. The powerful of the world will ruthlessly abuse their power, and we've of course seen that very much so. They will transform the building blocks of life, which what it's referring to here is the atomic weapons. It will transform the building blocks of life into death-bringing weapons in order to destroy nature and to kill human beings in vast numbers. And this same phrase keeps repeating. When the prophet of the new time comes, the sky, oceans, the forests, the prairies, and the deserts, as well as the mountainous regions, will be populated to such an extent that no human being is able to take one step that is unnoticed. So we're in a time of great overpopulation. And this is, as I was saying earlier, it's incredible the rate at which our population has increased, because just during the time of Billy's life, 2.8 billion people back in the time of World War II. Now we have 9 billion people. When the prophet of the new time appears, the skies, the oceans, the forests, the prairies, and the deserts, as well as the mountainous regions, will be populated to such an extent that no human being is able to take one step that is unnoticed. It will be a time when gigantic buildings and towers reaching up high into the sky are being built in all countries of the earth. The human beings will live and work in these towers and buildings. There will not be enough bread for everybody, and also water will become increasingly scarce. So these are some of the trends that are coming very quickly that we have to face. I wanted to also cover just a little bit of little bit of information in the book, Die Art zu Leben, or The Way to Live. And this section talks a little bit, well, let me read just a little bit more to you. It says here, flattering words are spoken by human beings whose desires are directed at profit and advantage. Human beings ought to always be reachable for each other because it is possible that they will need each other. It is useless to reproach a human being about something which has already run its course. However, the mistakes which are pointed out can lead to their rectification in the future. A human being, with his or her thinking and actions, always has only his or her own advantage and profit in mind, and will never choose an honest form of life, but instead earns much vexation, resentment, ununderstanding, and hate. The next section here talks about true love as compared to artificial love, something that we've talked about, true love being effective love, being a creational natural law, the first creational natural law, the most important. It says, every human, every morning, may the human being greet the new day with inspired love, and in waking, give the life the appropriate thanks and promise that he or she will contemplate the delight of the true love and will never rest in creating the truthfully love in himself or herself. And may the human being return home every evening satisfied by the fulfilling of his or her day's work, full of gratitude and love, and may the human being then go to sleep with words of love in his or her lips for the almightiness of the creation and its truthfully all-embracing love. True love has no wishes at all. Thus, his/her main wish should be that he or she becomes free of the burden of the unknowledge and of the disharmony, that he or she may melt like cold glacial ice through the glow of the sun and become a rushing brook, which splashing pours down to the valley and sings its incomparable melody, to then wind through the country and flow into the ocean, to become one with its loving connectedness. A truly peace-loving human being avoids quarreling, but if it is unavoidable, then the peace-loving one remains correct and polite, because even in the quarreling, he or she remains a peace lover. Just as the love crowns the human being, it also tortures him or her. And the love tortures because inherent to it are renunciation and demands into which the human being has to integrate him or herself, which often very much goes against his or her will. Now, this love that this passage is talking about is the affective false love. Let me continue. However, this is the wrong form of love, which is only artificial, created in order to fulfill emotional and lustful wishes. In this form of the love, it is better for the human being if he/she covers the nakedness of her greed and searches for the true value of love. True love is a concentrated form of the fine spiritual perception and is not built upon emotions. The love is not located in the heart and is not the power of a god. Rather, it is the purest fine spiritual perception of the spirit and of the consciousness of the human being who creates it in him or herself by means of fine spiritual perceptions. You know, this is one idea that's repeated over and over again, the idea of this fine spiritual perception. And when you have fine spiritual perception, you're supposed to be able to start to sense the radiating love of creation. Remember, creation radiates love, so that at every point and every place, a human being can come up against the radiating love of creation. Love is the highest principle in all creation, and everything follows that principle in absolute logic. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. This is some very interesting information. If you apply it to what you have seen, if you apply it to nature, you can start to see this. The truthly love in the form of fine spiritual perception is all-embracing, is never fickle, and is absolutely indestructible. It is creational natural and cannot be impaired by any kinds of things, by bad habits, negative or evil powers. Thus, the course of true love is not directed. This is really important. True love is not directed. While it, however, as the creational natural highest factor of all life and of logic, directs the human being in dignity during the course of his or her life. And this is the way you tell true love from false love, because this is not the case with false love, which results from emotions and drives. Because this artificial love, which is steered by the human being, is directed always according to the emotional and the libidinous wishes and thoughts, the sex drive. Another important idea in the book, The Way to Live, besides the concept we just discussed, which is effective love, real love versus false love, Billy also talks about the fulfillment of your duty to yourself. And he says, always care for the best health of your body and your psyche. Do not disregard the health of your consciousness. Whoever constantly challenges his/her body and his/her psyche and his/her consciousness does good and thereby promotes the fulfillment of his or her duty to himself. And this is where the law of striving intersects with fulfillment of duty to yourself. And again, it's whoever constantly challenges his or her body and his or her psyche does good. Whoever devotes him or herself to the passion and insensately sets the sails of his or her lusts, vices, and addiction finally runs through the smoldering desert, dying of thirst. Something to think about. If the human being does not continually pay attention to him/herself and does not fulfill his or her duty to himself, then he or she declines and ends in misery, whereby even suicidal thoughts are not infrequent. Others respect you only when you are able to give yourself sufficient respect. Therefore, never do hidden things about which you would have to feel ashamed. Therefore, yourself, or in the eyes of a stranger, should such a one see your reprehensible deeds, or in some other way become aware of them. Always speak the truth freely, openly, and unvarnished, even if the people may not be able to hear it and object to it. Always act, think, feel, and speak in a good form and decently, because otherwise you forfeit your self-esteem. Your clothes also speak for you accordingly, because you always form your exterior according to your innermost. Never allow yourself to appear ragged in your clothing and self-care, not even when you are hidden, forgotten by the world, and all alone somewhere in the deepest desert where you cannot be seen by any human being. Never lose confidence in yourself. And also consider that you may always be just as wise and skillful as many others. And then this is a phrase from a bigger section that I pulled out, which is also rooted in you never despairing and never being in bad temper when you do reach the same high intellectual position or moral greatness of another human being. There are no two human beings in the whole universe who would be at the same exact level of evolution. You always be lower or higher than the person next to you. And in this regard, they are partly lower developed and partly higher developed. Consequently, it follows that not all human beings simply belong to lower or higher levels of evolution. Rather, there is a mixture. If you want to live in fulfillment to your duty to yourself, in fulfillment of your duty, then never let yourself be controlled by any desires. Also, you must never allow yourself to be controlled by the desire which often motivates you to play a shining lead role. It is much more the case that they exert themselves to the point of extreme effort in all things and actually fulfill their duty to themselves. Boredom is the death of all initiative. And whoever falls prey to boredom falls prey to addictions and vices and goes astray. Therefore, may every human being also be a good and pleasant companion for himself or herself, who can personally entertain himself or herself to his satisfaction, and not only idleness as necessary, and only goes to idleness when they need necessary relaxation. Only very few human beings are able to understand how boredom, poverty of thought, as well as self-centeredness lead to deteriorating to a monotonous, uninteresting inner nature. Thus, nothing exists in the whole universe that would not be connected to the fulfilling of your duty to yourself. So anyway, I also briefly covered some stuff in Contact 544, which talks about there are actually seven major forces of nature, and there are only four known to Earth scientists. And it explains roughly, and I haven't got to it in great depth, that everything comes from a spirit energetic structure. And our particle physicists here on the Earth don't understand that everything comes from this spirit energetic structure of all things. So the Plarion tell us that the existence of the universe cannot be explained purely from the perspective of the material realm, which is quite unfortunate because most of our scientists only look at things from the material realm. So in any case, folks, I had only planned just to do this short show tonight. I apologize to the person that has their hand up who called in. I promise you we'll be back on Monday, and we'll get a chance to chat then. Anyway, thanks for stopping by. This is Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Bye-bye.